All right. Welcome to Avery Adventures Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Avery.
And I'm Tanya Avery.
Today on the show, we have two guests again. We have the one and only Justin Crosley.
Thanks, Ryan.
The intern.
And we have straight from Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska, Tyler Friel.
Yep.
Welcome to the show. We got Tyler on. Justin's on. He's been on a couple of these. Tyler, this is the first time we're getting Tyler on. If you know anything about outdoor life, Tyler's worked for Outdoor Life for what, 5-6 years?
6 or 7, somewhere in there.
Tyler is, the more I talk to him, the more I'm finding out he's like an onion, if you can use that Shrek terminology. He's got many layers. He's a trapper. He's a stick bow shooter. He's hunted all the major species of Alaska.
For the most part, yeah.
Yep, you've shot service rifle.
Yeah.
Shoot long range.
Yeah.
Do you shoot a compound?
No.
Well, I like him better already.
Oh my gosh, what
kind of question is that?
Oh, I love this guy already.
I owned a compound for a while, and it spent more time in the closet than...
Back in college?
Actually, yes.
Good man. I don't like... This may sound bad, but I love bow hunting. I hate compound shooters. I'd go to 3D tournaments. This guy's spending 7 days with his binocular trying to find the X ring. They seem to have this, not all of them, but a lot of them have this elitism thing, you know, and they tell me I got to get closer with my long range gun, yet they have 7-8 or a slider on their bow. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. And it's not all you compound shooters. It's just so
I can't say I hate compound shooters. I was actually the president of our archery club there in Fairbanks for a while, and I've got good buddies that are compound shooters, but I do get what you're saying and totally understand that attitude sometimes. And I love shooting a stick bow. On the flip side, there are plenty of stick bow shooters that think they're the hottest thing since sliced bread, and they suck.
I can't agree. Right. I couldn't agree more. I agree. I guess I hate elitism at any level.
Yeah.
Is the main thing. And the problem, most of those guys don't think they're being elitists, but they are.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I am, and I don't think I am.
I don't know. I suck at everything. So I'm not elitist. I just like to go out and go hunting, and I do it with the best tool I think at the time. And that's what I do.
Yeah. One, there was one fairly famous bow hunter I ran into on the tail end of a sheep hunt and said, you know, kind of knew who I was. And, oh, you're a bow hunter, aren't you? Well, yeah, when I'm hunting with a bow. And, oh, you're just a hunter. Okay.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
What does that mean? Like that's a lesser, like a subspecies of being an archer.
Yeah, you know, guys that are very successful with their bows, like, yeah, I'd be proud of it too, but it's like the whole, well, anytime someone, well, I haven't killed an animal with a rifle in so long, well, good for you.
Absolutely, there's microclimates out there. I believe this with all my heart, it's easier for me to kill a bigger bull in North Idaho with a stick bow or a compound than it is with a rifle. Yeah. Just the terrain.
Yeah. Yeah.
The terrain is set up to call them in. It's good for close quarters combat. If not, you have to shoot them in clear cuts 8, 9, 12, if you see them long enough to shoot them.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure there's places in Alaska that's similar to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just get the whole gamut. The place is so huge. You know, you can't even put it into words, like in tons of different, habitats or just types of country that are
right.
Anything from zero visibility, stumbling around in the swamp, to you can see for 15 miles.
And there's room at the table for everyone.
Yep.
I want to talk more about your trapping. We actually had a lift ride. We're at the SHOT Show, and we had a lift ride over to the New York, and we were talking about trapping on the ride over, and the lift driver was giving us these, I said something about trapping wolves and lynx, and he gave me this cross-eyed look like, what? What are you guys talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that stuff's just normal. I don't know what his problem is.
I don't know. There's a lot of wolves running around Las Vegas. That may
no,
be
it. Probably not. I'd make a Hangover reference, but way too long. It's been way too long.
I love that movie. So tell us how... I'm really interested in trapping, and I want to get into trapping wolves. Up in Alaska, when does it start? What do you do? How does that work in Alaska?
Pretty much trapping season, for the most part, starts November 1st. Generally, we've got snow by then. You know, we'll have weird years now and then. But historically, you get the fur is starting to prime up November 1st and runs through, for most species, through the end of February. Some stuff's later. Like, you can trap wolves technically through the end of April. Now, once gotcha. You get into April and stuff starts warming up, there's no point because they're getting springy and there's not much point in trapping them when they're not going to be prime or they're getting a lot of damage. So losing my train of thought a little bit, but
that's okay.
You know, a lot of guys, and I fall into the recreational trapper category. There are guys up there out in the sticks that make a significant part of their living out of it. But
are wolves what you mostly shoot for? Or?
No, typically over the years it's been marten, and that's kind of like the money hide. It's worth, you know, there's always a demand for it, and the market fluctuates, but it's worth the most for the amount of effort.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know, they're little critters. Some years it just goes insane. A few years ago, you know, a local buyer that I skinned for and worked for in town was paying like $225 to $250 for the males. Wow. And it's an overgrown weasel.
Right.
And that was just a crazy year. But even this year, you know, it's looking like on the auction, they may go $100 for the good males. So, you know, guys are average. If you can average 70, 80, 90 bucks for marten, you know, you can pile up a pretty good amount of money. You know, there's a lot of them around and one of the easiest things to catch, but I'd say trapping wolves is the most challenging and the most fun. You know, I can talk like an expert wolf trapper all I want, but there's 100 guys up there that are way better at it than me and just guys that are lethal, but I really enjoy it. It's super challenging and it gets in your blood. That same fur buyer work for it, he'll grumble, oh, these guys get the wolf sickness, you know, they'll pass up 150 marten to catch three wolves.
I can see that.
Yeah, I can see that. The lynx, yeah. I do want to trap wolves, but the lynx I always think about, those are kind of cool little creatures.
Yeah, they're a super cool animal. They're not the brightest.
They're pretty
easy to catch, but they're super cool, like kind of just like a gangly bobcat. You know, they're kind of awkward, super long legs, and once they get fully prime and furred out, you know, their feet are like, their paws are like 5 inches across, you know, they'll so they can get around in the snow, and those things are pretty lethal critters too.
Mm-hmm. I was reading something the other day about lynx, and they're talking about trapping lynx in Alaska and Canada, and they're, oh, there's no lynx, you know, there's a big, they need to be on the endangered species list, and I read it somewhere about the amount of lynx. There's a pile of lynx in Alaska.
Oh, yeah, and it just well-known, they fluctuate through a population cycle, kind of following the rabbits, which is their primary, they eat a lot of grouse, too, but their primary food is rabbits, or snowshoe hares, technically. But, you know, those snowshoe hares, and right now they're getting to the peak of their cycle where they're just everywhere, and they're, you know, more food, there's more cats, and they'll, they kind of spreads across the state following the food, where the food populations go up. But, it's getting to be a lot of them, and, here in a few years, the rabbits will start dying off and getting scarce, and then the toms will start eating the females and the kittens, and then at the low end, it's mostly big toms running around, big tomcats running around. But yeah, it fluctuates, but there's plenty of them. And like a lot of stuff, because, you know, people's, oh, well, I've never seen one or whatever. Well, even on the high cycle, I've only seen them a handful of times, not in a trap.
Right.
You know, that doesn't mean they're not there.
Is it harder, the wolverine side, is it hard to trap wolverines, or just not as many wolverines to trap?
I think generally it's just not the scarcity of them, but their nature to, they're just moving all the time. Guys that are in good country that have a lot of wolverines will catch more. They're not especially hard to catch. You know, they're overgrown weasel. They're not typically real trap shy, although you can get some that get pretty wise to it. The biggest thing, like a lot of stuff in Alaska, is just being where they are.
They sound kind of like cougars, the way you were explaining earlier, that they really cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, they do. They're just kind of perpetual motion machines. They'll just, just truck and truck. I've seen them sheep hunting where, you know, and I, people have followed where they're just covering 40 miles a day, stuff like that.
That's crazy.
You know, I know guys that have got on tracks up in the mountains that are really fresh and just run them and run them and run them and just can't ever catch up to them.
I never thought about that. That's a lot of room to roam.
Yeah, and that, you know, they're just constantly moving. You watch them just here, there, like, you know, like an ermine or something, or a weasel, just constantly moving.
But there's a lot of those bastards on Kodiak, those little ermine.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. On the wolf thing, is it easier for to catch them in a snare or a foothold?
Really depends on the location and whatnot. Snares are super effective, A, because they're cheaper. You can have a lot more, you can pack a lot more with you,
right,
and really gang set stuff up and close a lot of gaps. You know, each foothold, you know, like a number 9 wolf trap's like $120 to $150 by the time you get it all set up. Mm-hmm. And you can't carry near as many of them. So sure. They're both super effective in their right situation.
Is there one where it's kind of like a blind setup to one where, oh, I hit these wolf tracks, I'm going to set up a snare over a foothold?
I would say blind sets, if you can set snares, you know, if you have the tight spots they're going through to set them,
uh-huh,
you know, a lot of black spruce and stuff that funnels them through there. The biggest thing with that is it's easier to keep snares working. You know, footholds, they work really well, but they take a lot more maintenance. If you get thawing out or snows too much, you're constantly having to reset them and keep them working. I think that's the biggest challenge for wolf trapping, is just keeping your gear working up there. They, you know, some areas they'll be moving through a lot. If they have a kill in the area, they may hang around a while, but pretty typical is you may get one crack at a pack, you know, every 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, you know, they run these big cycles. And if your gear's not working when they come through, you're hosed till the next time they come through, if they do.
How long are those cycles?
It really depends, I think, on the pack and what kind of food's around. You know, where there's a lot of caribou, the wolves will hang around the caribou herds. But the areas I've trapped, it seems like they'll, and I can't follow everywhere they go, but they run, you know, 50-100 mile circuits, and they'll just circle back through. And I mean, they know the country, they know where to look for food. And if they get a moose down or something, a lot of times you'll see them come through maybe 2 or 3 days in a row or a couple times in a couple weeks. But a lot of times it's, you know, one pack that was coming through, a Martin lion I ran, was typically 3 or 4 weeks. Sometimes a couple times it was, you know, once a week, and then it would be sometimes 5 or 6 weeks before I'd see them come through again.
Well, that's impressive.
So you don't, I mean, they can vary. You can't say like, oh, okay, I missed this cycle, but 3 weeks again, you just kind of have to just start watching.
Yeah. And that's what I would do sometimes, you know, whether that's what guys more experienced than me would do or not. But if I, you know, I'd try to keep the stuff working as best I could, but if it was coming around that time frame where I expected them to be showing up again, I'd take a little extra time to make sure and that the gear's working. And several times, wolf trapping is an exercise in frustration for the most part. I don't know. Yeah. So many times it had them come through and be what I thought totally set up, and, you know, they'll come through and step on either side of a trap,
man, that's
step on the edge. Or the worst is when you know they're about, you know, they should be about to come through. One time in particular, warms up, starts raining, gets cold again, go up there, and they'd come through. And one time I'd hung one up in the one trap I reset, and there was two other traps that had tracks all over the pan, froze up.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's got to be irritating.
Yeah, it is.
and you were saying earlier too, it's not like you're just walking out your back door. You're traveling quite a ways, right? And you're spending a lot of time and money to go run that line every
So often. And I mean, I, you know, where I've been trapping, it's kind of a rinky dink little line. You know, there's guys that'll run over 100 miles of line, and it's a big deal to get out there and a ton of work. even just for the weekend warrior trapper, like I would call myself, it wouldn't really be accurate to call to say I'm super serious about it, because there's guys that are a lot more serious than me. You can. I think the thing you fight the most part is batteries. I know guys that have done it and caught some pretty cool stuff on there. The biggest thing is just the tracks. You know, you can learn to figure how many there are and where they go. And they have habits that make them, that are weaknesses to them. A lot of times they'll run through the same places every time they go, which is, you know, the only way you can.
Right.
You know, expect to set snares and catch them. They like to run in their old trails. It's just they're so efficient. You know, it's easier for them to run in their old tracks, you know, that they may have left 3 weeks ago if they can still find them. And even if they can't, a lot of times they'll be just right near there. Right. And the one pack that was running my Martin line there for a few years, every year they would get on the trail within 100 yards of the same spot and get off the trail within 100 yards of the same spot.
Wow. That's crazy. And how long is that? Was that line start to finish?
Oh, that one was a pretty short one. It was 7 or 8 miles. Yeah. And they would just run like a mile of it. Oh, and then okay. It was on top of a ridge. They'd get up in one spot, run it and drop off. Okay. And, I don't know how many times, in hindsight's 20/20, how many times I've kicked myself, being like, I knew I should have hung a snare there.
That is crazy. You ever end up snaring, you don't have elk, but moose or caribou?
I did hang up one moose in a snare, and it had a kind of a breakaway device, uh-huh. And so it just popped it out. And that's... It's the responsible thing to do for those things, because you're hanging a, you know, a 16, 18 inch wide, you know, diameter loop, mm-hmm. and where you set stuff, like you don't want to hang wolf snares in the willows, because that's what moose eat, and they right. spend a lot of time in there.
There's things you can do to negate that.
And the biggest thing is a lock, because, you know, they say a wolf. A big male wolf can do like 800 pounds of force. You know what to have the stuff rated to, and there's different ways of doing it. Cutting, you know, if it's Thompson lock, cutting a notch in the lock, or breakaway S hooks, where a moose is big enough and strong enough that if they get hung in them, they can just break right out of them, but it'll hold a wolf.
Nice. Me and you have talked about this back and forth on DM. What's the biggest wolf you've ever trapped, and what's the biggest wolf you've ever heard of being trapped up in Alaska?
I don't know that I weighed the biggest one. No, I did. It was 105 pounds. Uh-huh. It was the biggest one I've ever trapped.
So they're not all 200-300 pounds?
I'm not going to say they don't exist, because a lot of times when you talk uncertainties, you know, yep. you never know when you're going to be proven wrong, but absolutely. I've skinned over 300 wolves, and wow. the biggest one I've ever seen was 126 pounds. That was a giant.
Right. That's about, when we shot those wolves this year, luckily I checked in, there's a fishing game guy that day, and he had trapped wolves, and he said, I have probably checked in my life 400 to 500 wolves, he said, and not the biggest one they've ever trapped, he said, was 134 pounds. And he said that was 10 pounds bigger than any wolf they've ever had in there.
Yeah.
He said a big wolf's 120.
Yeah. And yeah, and that is like anything over 100 pounds for us is big. And I don't know, the Idaho wolves, wherever they pulled them from.
Right.
You know, looking at, you know, being involved in the fur market industry to a degree. I see a lot of the stuff that comes out of Canada, and they're typically all smaller than what we have.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Do they know why? It's a different like species, subspecies, or they?
I don't even know if it's different subspecies, just probably what has developed in that habitat. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to talk like I'm a biologist, because I'm not.
Yeah, me neither, but I find it fascinating. You see these guys. It was a 184-pounder Kevin yeah. shot the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just simply yeah. not the case most of the times.
How was that again?
184-pounder Kevin shot the other day.
These are those Alabama wolves.
They're big, man. They don't got any teeth down here. Oh, don't say that about Alabama people.
But, no, yeah.
Every, rock slide dog.
Every time I see someone post that, I'm like, okay. You know,
no, just simple,
if I saw it in person hanging on the scale, that'd be one thing. You know, I'm not going to say I couldn't be proven wrong, but yeah, I have seen enough sampling of the population that I would say I would be surprised if there's any regular weight, you know, meaning not completely just gorge themselves on moose right. or elk, you know, already being a big wolf that breaks 150 pounds, maybe, you know, but
I was, yeah, could yeah, be. Bigfoot's real. We just haven't found him yet, right? But the, I was trying to find like the biggest wolf that, and there was one, and I think it's Wyoming, that was checked in 2015 or 2016, whether it was the first year that they could legally hunt them. And it was 136 pounds. That was the biggest like confirmed weight I've ever been able to find.
And that's a little bit more in the realm of reality, I think.
Yeah.
And interesting. And I've had my taxidermist says, you know, have a lot of discussions with him and right. some other people. And there's whether it's a totally unproven theory, but it seems like a lot of times when a species or population animals is introduced or reintroduced into an area for the first time in a long time, it seems like the first generation of them do really well. And it would make sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, you turn a bunch of wolves loose in an area with all kinds of food animals that have no idea what they are.
Right.
That, you know, so.
Yeah, they're going to get big because they're the first.
Yeah. Like opening at the country buffet.
Yep.
First call.
Apex predator hasn't been here for 100 years and boom, he's back.
Yep.
But the, I don't remember where I was going to go with this, but the thing that you see, I think sometimes is, or that I think about is they're 100-pound wolf and you get like 3 or 4 of them.
Gosh.
Can you imagine those suckers chasing you? I mean, my God, they're all just teeth.
Yeah. Thank goodness they're smart enough to not do that.
Right. But I mean, you know, just think of elk or caribou or moose and you got a little pack of these things biting at you. They have.
Oh, you're talking from the perspective of the.
Either way. Okay. I mean, they're just.
I'm a little slow.
No, they're killers. That's what they're designed to do. And you take an apex predator that wasn't there for 100 years and boom, they're there. Shit's going to change.
Oh yeah. Big time.
But I think I'm going to beat that wolf trapping thing to death. I also want to talk to you about bears and stick bows.
Yeah.
You've shot a grizzly or multiple grizzlies with a stick bow?
I shot 4 grizzlies with a recurve.
That's amazing. Can you kind of talk us through your setup, how you killed them, what you did?
Yeah, I've been shooting a bear's paw ILF bow for years. I really like it. I like to shoot heavy arrows. I think I change stuff up and experiment. Typically I get stuck with arrows that are over 600 grains because of my long draw. I have to use super stiff, the stiffest arrows I can find.
What's your draw length?
32 inches.
With a stick bow?
Yeah.
That's a power stroke, brother.
32 AMO. I mean, and I shoot vanes, so I shoot off an elevated, you know, bare weather rest. But some of my arrow setups, I have to cut them so short to get them to spine right that I'm like almost overdrawn. You know, the broadhead comes back into the riser. I wouldn't be able to shoot off the shelf.
That's crazy. Hmm. So are you, I know it's legal, isn't it legal to bait Alaskan grizzlies?
In a lot of areas it is. It used to be, used to not be. And a lot of areas were getting a lot of them and people pushing for it. And everyone, including the area we hunted, we had a black bear bait that my uncle had been running since I was in diapers, basically. And anyway, that whole area used to be all black bears. And then started showing up and grizzlies started showing up more and more and more. And then, I don't know, from about 15 years ago after June 1st, you just abandoned them cause it was all grizzlies.
Oh,
and,
really?
So people were pushing for it and they finally said, okay, you know, you can shoot grizzlies over bait. And it was one or two units that they opened up initially. And I think they realized, and I've had this talk with, you know, some of the fishing game folks and people thought it was going to be way easier than it is, you know, they're just a totally different animal than a black bear. And even getting a big black bear on a bait is not near as easy as a lot of people like to say it is.
I agree with that.
They're way less predictable and they're they're constantly moving. I've heard it's a little different with brown bears down farther south, that some folks can get them to camp on a bait or keep coming into it. My experience where I'm at, you have basically 2 days. You know, they'll find it, and then usually they'll come in the next night. But sometimes you'll get three, a lot. Sometimes you get one, but usually two, it seems like, is the average. And then you never see them again.
And then they move on.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because that's not what, I mean, I don't have a bunch of experience with bear baiting, but I kind of thought they lived in the same area and would constantly come in time after time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and that could be the case in some areas. Mm-hmm. Where I'm at, they den up in the mountains, and then in the springtime they come out, and then they end up working their way down the rivers. Makes right sense. About the time the moose calves are dropping, and hunt moose calves,
right?
Because that's the majority of the food that's available. And it's interesting. I don't know if you guys saw that study. I don't know who did it, where they had collared a number of grizzly bears and followed them through this moose calving season. And, you know, some of them would kill a handful of calves in this 30 days, and, you know, one or two would kill 40. I'm just throwing the numbers out there, but it was an impressive number of moose calves that in just bear, you know, not to humanize them, but in some ways bears are like people. Every individual one is different. Mm-hmm. Like on the North Slope, there was the muskox were hurting pretty bad, because there was, if I remember correctly, there was one sow that figured out how to kill those muskox to just push them and push them till they panicked, and taught her cubs how to do that. And then there was a handful of bears running around up there that were just laying waste to the muskox,
killing way more than the rest.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, so we got to hunt them on bait, and I feel like I have it kind of figured out. Looking at just harvest statistics, it's, you know, shooting grizzlies on baits, like less than 3% success rate.
Really?
Yeah. It's, you know.
So it's not like shooting fish in a barrel.
No. A lot of it's getting lucky. You know, every year, you know, there's a number of guys that get them that get them, but it's hard to be consistent. I feel like I've kind of figured it out. I got really lucky the first year, kind of figuring out that once everybody gets pictures, not everybody, but a lot of people get pictures of these grizzly bears on their bait, but see, and even I did, and thought, man, this is going to be a slam dunk. But you start thinking about how many big grizzly bears have I actually seen, and it starts making sense. And then when I finally started hunting them and paying attention to what was happening, started noticing that kind of the, I call it the 2 day rule.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the first year I got lucky and hit it right when, and it was able to figure that out and killed just a tremendous grizzly bear. And got another one the next year, and then didn't get one the following year, and I've got one each of the past 2 years. But the past 2 years, it's each taken me 2 months to get one shot.
Wow. How big's an interior grizzly? Those are considered interior?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, right. We're right in the middle of Alaska. They're true interior grizzlies. I mean, the unalakleet bears are grizzlies, uh-huh. But you look at skulls and stuff. My personal argument is that they're brown bears, just north of the line that has to be drawn to differentiate.
Oh, gotcha.
But yeah, they're interior bears, and I would say a good grizzly bear is over 7 foot. You know, I don't know what the average is.
What would one of those weigh, like average?
I don't know. I've never weighed them, so I don't know. And you know how people get with bear weights.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you shot one with a black bear with a stick bow?
Yeah, I've shot a few of them with.
Is there a difference in how hardy one is over the other? I mean, is a grizzly harder to bring down, or is it?
Not that I've noticed. None of my four grizzlies have made it farther than 60 yards.
And you hit them through the lungs?
Yeah. Lungs and heart. Wow. It just, the biggest thing I've seen, and from doing a little bit of guiding and whatnot, is bears that don't know you're there are way easier to kill. And a bear, even if the shot kind of spooks them, they don't know what happened. You know, they don't have a chance to get their adrenaline amped up, because I have run into several bears, even black bears, that if they get a chance to get their adrenaline pumped up, they're really tough to kill.
Now, everybody's like, oh, do you eat it? Do you eat those black bears you're shooting, or grizzly bears or black bears you're shooting?
I like black bear. You know, it makes really good sausage. Some of them I eat, some of them I don't. I haven't been able to stomach any of my grizzly bears.
I think it goes back to the, they still have to be controlled.
Yeah.
Some of those bears are eating, you said 40 moose calves or whatever number.
Yeah. And I gave it an honest shot. You know, a couple of the bears just stunk so bad that it wasn't even, and one of them didn't smell at all. And it was all right, but, you know, probably decent sausage meat. But, yeah, the biggest thing, and I don't know, you can get so deep into the woods on that argument.
Yeah, you can.
You can't find yourself out. What I have seen is before they started it, we run that river all summer. You're lucky to see one moose an entire summer on that river.
Wow.
And this past season, one night running back, I saw six cows with new calves.
Really?
And all summer seeing bulls and, you know, and there's me and one other group of guys that hunt that river, and they kind of have it figured out too. And I think probably between all of us, we've probably taken 15 grizzlies out of there, and the moose are definitely showing up. And I've noticed a lot more wolf sign out there too this winter, which may mean there's more moose, so the wolves are hanging around a little bit longer. But I think just giving those calves a little bit of time to get their feet under them makes a big difference. And out of those 15 or so grizzlies, maybe there was only three of them that were really hard on them, but it has made a difference. Mm-hmm.
That is amazing.
Do you, with the black bear and grizzly bear baits, is it you hunting off the same bait, or you do it totally different setup, different, you know, types of baits?
I pretty much use the same bait, and one of the baits I've had like one or two black bears come in there over the, you know, couple of years I've had that bait. The other bait, our traditional black bear bait, the black bears show up first. Mm-hmm. Some years you get a weird year where there's grizzlies on it right away, but typically, and that's quite a ways downriver from there, and they're moving downriver, so typically about June 5th or so the grizzlies start showing up there. And then there's still black bears that use it, but they get a lot tougher to hunt. You know, they're just way cagier.
Yeah.
I bet.
You know, I had the second grizzly I killed, there was a black bear. I fell asleep in my stand at like midnight. And
that seems a pretty dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. I don't know. It's normal. You know.
I just heard hunting at midnight, and that's not normal for the lower 48.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still light out.
And, you know, I fell asleep about midnight, and this black bear woke me up at about 2 trying to climb up my tree.
Oh, shit.
And so I, you know, and I typically huff at, you know, I'll just huff at him like a bear, and, you know, I'm not afraid to make noise, but I tried him, and it's weird what will and won't spook bears sometimes, but... my whatever theory it is, if I, you know, try to sound like a bear being aggressive towards them, and
scare them off.
I've never had much issue. I've had quite a few bears try to climb the tree, but huff at them and they go about their business. Anyway, he went down and laid down, and I was still pretty drowsy and had my bow hanging on a hook there on the tree and just kind of watching this black bear. He went over there and laid down, start eating, and then all of a sudden he picks his head up and takes off running, and I'm like, it's about to get real, you know. So as quick as I could reach from, grab my bow, pull it over to, you know, get it in front of me, this grizzly came running in, turned broadside. I drew and shot.
Wow.
I mean, it was pretty quick, but.
And I'm assuming given the chance, it'll kill the black bear, wouldn't it? Or do they just chase them off?
I think they'll kill them if they get a chance, you know, maybe not every time. You don't know how much. It'd be interesting to me to know like how much they actually bump into each other.
Probably won't just go totally out of its way to kill one. It'd have to be right there probably.
Yeah.
Snap it up.
I think so. Although, you know, it's interesting, you know, you see like the black bears stick around pretty regularly, and especially younger bears, mm-hmm. sows with cubs. And I mean, there's been quite a few where when the grizzlies show up, like a cub or two disappears or the sow disappears. And cubs start coming in by themselves, and you just wonder what happened.
Right.
Kind of think it's safe to assume sometimes, but.
You ever had any, you know, out hunting or any bluff charges or problems with bears?
Yeah, several. That bait we used to set up down down kind of on the ground and had a sow grizzly when I was a kid. I was 16 and trying to get black bears on there, and the sow grizzly came in. My dad was with me, and he kind of stomped and hollered, and we could see it was grizzlies back in there, and the cubs just took off for the bait, and she came just tearing in and never really saw us, but she didn't like it, and she didn't want to be there, but the cubs wouldn't leave, and it was kind of getting ugly, but finally a boar grizzly came in, and she chased him off, and they left, and we got out of there.
Lord.
But the most recent one, the bait that's way upriver, went the year it put it in, I didn't put tree stands up or anything. It just built a ground blind and had my buddy Nick Mookie came up there with me, and we both had recurves and sat down, and I was first up, and on the trail camera there was a boar and a sow grizzly had come in the night before and earlier that day. So we set up in our old chairs and just this spruce bough ground blind and 12 yards to the bait. I mean, it was real bright, but like real smart.
Right.
But
right. No, I was following. We were following.
So I'm sitting there with my bow, and it, we weren't in there very long, and we hear these things coming, and we're kind of on this elevated chunk of dirt in the middle, surrounded by swamp. And here I'm coming through the alders around and circling around upwind behind us. And I got a spruce tree to my right, and I'm kind of eyeballing him to the left, and he can see him and kind of motions that they're coming by us. And so I'm holding still, and she walks by me. I mean, could have reached out and poked her with my arrow,
right?
But walks right by me, and I figured the boar would be right behind her. And my plan was, as soon as he got in front of me, to just draw and shoot him at whatever range it ended up being. But she walked by me, and he stayed around, goofing around behind us. She walks to the bait, sits down, and then he broke a stick or something, and she turned around, and we're right between the two of them.
Right.
Just instantly full charge.
I'm surprised that Air Force guy didn't run off and poop his pants.
Yeah. I got to say, he held his mud together pretty good. He had the gun, and all I had was my bow, so I was about three-quarter draw, you know.
Right.
This may get pretty Western, but she's gonna have this sow's gonna have arrow in her. And I don't know when it was, at a point we could tell she was changing her mind, and the skid mark stopped one step in front of our blind. Jesus. And she took off, and then that boar runs around to the left side and stops 4 yards from him broadside, and his bow's laying on the ground. He's got the gun and pauses for a few seconds and runs off, and I don't know what exactly was I said. I'm like, you did pretty good.
That's
and
crazy.
It's like, that was awesome. And I'm like, why didn't you shoot him? It never occurred to me to pull the trigger. but he was on that sow. I mean, you know, would have been a dome shot, and she'd come tumbling in and knocked us over. But
God, that's insane. There's probably a little bigger pucker factor when those grizzlies come over those black bears.
A little, yeah. I pretty much quit using a ground blind just because, you know, you can call, yeah, because I'm a chicken, you can say maybe, but
no, it's so, I would be in a tree also.
It's so hard to stay undetected with them.
Is it?
Yeah, black bears, a lot of times on a ground bear, I love ground blinds for black bears. I think it's more fun, and I'm not honestly not too worried about them. You know, had them try to climb in the blind before, and you kind of shoo them away if you don't want to kill them. But
shoo, bear, shoo. You're too small.
But
that's funny.
But those grizzly bears, they're just wired, just antsy, constantly moving, and they're super
spooky.
They're
more of a predator. They're more in tune with what the hell is going on than a black bear.
They are, and you know, black bears will see you and kind of give you the stare down, and you know, some bears will spook, but a lot of them, if they decide you're not worth worrying about, then they'll go about their business. But the grizzlies, if they, you know, you're on the ground and they see you that close, so they'll either run or charge. You know, they're super spooky, and one of their natural responses is just to go full bore and make up their mind on the way.
Wow. You have one of them on video or YouTube, don't you? You shooting one, or don't you have
something
on? Yeah,
I've got a couple of them. The last two grizzly bears I have on video shooting them.
Where do you find that?
on the best place is the little pitch part here. I run a Facebook page called Points North. Mm-hmm. It's under Outdoor Life Magazine, basically a place where I produce all my content and videos, just and stories and videos, tips, just whatever stuff I can spew, I guess. But yeah, those videos are from last year and this year, both on there, along with, you know, a lot of the other hunting stuff. There's one I think it's on there. It was one of the first videos we posted when we started the page. We kind of resurrected it from the archives the year before it was legal to shoot grizzlies on bait. I was hunting a black bear bait from the ground and, like, yeah, 10 or 12 yards to the bait, yeah, and had my bow on my lap and, took my 375 leaning against a tree and hear this bear coming. Then I kind of see through the woods, it's a grizzly, pick up the rifle and comes in, and it was a big bear. And, I'm thinking, oh, I want to watch this thing for a little while before I run it off, and watching it. And I had walked up to rebait, then walked back and got in the blind, and he starts walking, smelling the ground. And I know he's smelling where I walked, and when I realized what he was doing, he was on the other side of this tree right to my left, about 6 or 7 yards away, and then turned and came following it right in front of the blind. And I got that on camera. I had a GoPro and a camera on a tripod. He walks out of the frame and then comes around, and I'm finally like, I got to let this bear know I'm here,
right,
without making
scaring
him freak
the shit out of him.
And so I just kind of whispered, like, hey, bear, get out of here. Like, really as quiet as I could. And, you know, meanwhile, finger on the trigger, ready to give him a dome shot. But, I knew just the way they act, I knew he'd take a second to make up his mind what to do. And it could have got pretty interesting. I feel like I would have been fine, but, you know, he pops his head up one step off the end of my muzzle and, pops
Jesus
his head up
crimey.
And then takes off.
Wow. And they just look like ass kickers.
Yeah, he was a big bear. I mean, I was sitting in a little camp chair or something like that, and it was straight on. You know, I don't know what that bear would have squared out at.
Did he look towards you?
Oh yeah, he had never looked towards me till I let him know I was there, and he looked me right in the face.
And he's like, oh,
right off
the
gun barrel.
Just,
and yeah, literally, you know, the GoPro, it looks a little, you know, the fisheye lens, it looks a little farther away. The video camera I had on the tripod, he's out of the lens, and you kind of hear it, and then his head fills up the frame, and
wow. That's so
scary. That was one of the most exciting, like, I mean,
Jesus.
One of the most exciting things I've experienced. Could have, you know, potentially could have gone south, but.
And that's on that. What did you say it was on Facebook?
That it's on the Points North page, like way back. It was one of the first videos we put up, but it's also, we had put it on YouTube years ago. It's called Way Too Close to a Grizzly.
There you go.
I'll show you after we get done.
Absolutely. I want to move on because you've killed a lot of dull sheep.
Yeah, a couple.
How many is a couple?
11.
Yeah, just a couple. You say...
How lucky are you? You must be really lucky.
I just make good life choices.
Yeah, you hear that all the time. We hear that all the time. Like, you are so lucky. And it's like, is it luck or is it preparation? Is it life choices? Let's analyze that.
Yeah, I you know, and there's so many people, oh, I want to do that so bad. Well, you know, if you want to make it a priority... You can do it.
Right.
Whether it's saving up for a guided hunt, which you have to do if you're non-resident,
right,
or there's guys that live there to hunt sheep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nothing's free in life, and you have to do stuff. Oh.
She keeps fucking with that mic. She's drinking, then she's like, is it Dahl? I've been fucking names up all weekend or all week. Is it Dahl or Dahl?
Dahl sheep.
Dahl sheep.
But D-A-L-L. It annoys me when it's people spell it D-O-L-L.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, but...
So is it all different places in Alaska? Is it the same general mountain range? I'm not asking for it, but I mean, Are you going into new areas? You flying in? You're floating? Or how does that work?
Kind of a mix. I've done the first one I ever killed was just backpacking from the road. I've done a lot of that stuff was just backpacking from the truck or riding the four wheeler. Excuse me, riding the four wheeler and then backpacking, flying in and then backpacking. Actually, there's this a sheep hunting page on Facebook, of course, and it kind of has deteriorated.
Do they tell you how to do it and what you're doing wrong?
Oh, everybody. I don't know. Some of the stuff, there's some good information on there and some like super, super experienced sheep hunters, but there's also a lot of people that aren't. And, one guy, let's see some, it was today, I think, let's see some pictures of backpack sheep hunts and then, no ATVs, no airplane, walk from your truck. And I'm like, well, every sheep hunt I've been on has been a backpack sheep hunt.
I like the way you do things. You always take the road less traveled in those arguments. I've watched it and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're maybe the second person in the world that appreciates it. But
I like the way you go about your debates.
But yeah, I mean, it's every sheep hunt I've been on is a backpack hunt. I've flown in and then killed sheep 26 miles from where I got dropped off.
That would be probably a backpack sheep hunt.
It's just funny. I someone had tagged me in it, and because I do have a couple that I walked from the truck. If whatever criteria I have to abide by to be a backpack sheep hunter,
goes back to my elitism comments.
Oh yeah, truthfully. Totally. And maybe I'm guilty of it at times. People have their tendencies, but people will. I just love when people misdefine or improperly define things to suit themselves and how they do things and puff themselves up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And they steer it in a way that it makes them look better, if that makes
exactly
sense.
Yeah. And whatever subject it happens to be on, I see a lot of this stuff, and generally it seems like people have this natural tendency around whatever, whether it's ethics type thing, their worldview is everything's good. And if they don't like something or they don't understand or have never done something, if they think they don't like something, then they have all the reasons in the world while they're bet why what they do is better than that.
Absolutely. They do.
I went and filmed my dad's and Nick's muskox hunt a couple of years ago. And I thought it was, I was pissed that I didn't have a muskox tag, but right. I got way, it's no rock house, but I got way cooler, way cooler video than I would have got if I had a tag, because I would have been worried about hunting them.
Right.
But get the comments, oh, that doesn't look like hunting. It's like, yeah, we buzzed around snow machines, because we got to cover this huge country. You can't walk it and locate stuff. And muskox aren't naturally the most flighty animals in the world, but until you've gone and experienced it and seen that it's not really as easy as you may think it is. And, a lot of the critiques are, guys, they're pictures of white-tailed deer in a cornfield, which I'm not saying there's any, I have zero issue with that.
But they've never been there. They've never done it. They've never put forth the effort to even try to do that.
Yeah. Where it's not the most challenging hunt in the world, but it took us several hours to get on this herd and then get my dad a shot, and it's 5 degrees and blowing 40 miles an hour, have to actually work in directly down to shoot into the wind.
That's good enough for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was one or two guys that were kind of chipping. Oh, it's like shooting lawn furniture. And then this guy I'm thinking of, and he's a nice guy, but like shooting lawn furniture, and he had a tag. He came back. Yeah, it wasn't quite as easy as I thought it would be.
Yeah, I don't understand why that people have to jump in there and tear somebody down. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and because I've done my fair share of calling out, there is a difference. There is a difference between calling stuff out in a appropriate manner and way, and just talking crap about people about something you have no idea. You really have no idea or experience on.
I do that stuff, and if I don't agree with what you're doing, I just don't read it.
Yeah.
I don't comment. I just I move on.
Yeah. I mean, really he hard? Doesn't read very much of my stuff. So, I mean, I think I see where you...
People like, yeah. spend so much time like putting snarky little remarks and I'm like, really? Do you have that much free time? I mean, are you,
yeah. yeah. Are you that just... That sad? Yeah, you like, just you that have, hateful?
Like, yeah. I mean, I might think something's dumb, but I just keep scrolling. I don't stop and have to be like, that's dumb.
Yeah, because, you know, yeah. I don't know all the facts either.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the facts you're a muskox. I'm not going to come on and say, boy, Tyler, this looks like you're shooting something easy. Look like fish in a barrel. I don't know what you went through to get to that point. And yeah. chances are I never will.
Yeah.
So why would I naysay something I have no idea about?
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. It's definitely a line between legitimate calling out in an appropriate manner right. and just talking shit.
Yeah, have you been on 50 of those hunts, you might, you have a little better understanding of what's going on, then I can understand that.
Yeah.
But just to jump on there just to be a dick makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
But getting back on the sheep, 11 sheep. That is crazy. Yeah. Is there any that stand out? I don't know nothing about sheep, especially doll sheep. I don't know nothing about them. Is what's the big one? Have you shot a giant one? Have you shot?
I haven't shot any that most people would call giants. I've shot some nice sheep. For some reason, the 40-incher eludes me, and maybe that's because I was too quick on the trigger sometimes. I mean, and a 40-inch ram is not a regular thing, like a 30-inch mule deer or something. I don't know how to compare it, but, you know, that 40-inch ram is kind of the bar, quote-unquote, gotcha. For, like, a giant ram and for the average sheep hunter and... where I'm going with that, but I've seen a few, and there was one that I, you know, just didn't get a shot at, but I've gone on trips where buddies that I'm going with, and we split up, and they've got them, but I'm, you know, I would shoot every one of the sheep I got again.
Is it, I mean, for the most part, is it pretty challenging? Are they tough to find, tough to get on?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, and it's funny because they're, white sheep would be the easiest thing. And sometimes they're easy to see, sometimes they're not. The physical aspect of it's tough. It's a grind. Probably average over the years on a sheep hunt, I'll put on between 50 and 70 miles.
Wow.
You know, one time a hunt, we figured 110. Mm-hmm. Just keep grinding away and staying on the glass and not quit. I mean, I'm no specimen of fitness myself, but I can still manage to get it done. But yeah, I mean, each one of them is special to me in different ways. You know, there's one I went solo and got and packed the whole thing 17 miles back to the airstrip and one, you know, gotcha. One load, which was kind of dumb. But
that is a feat.
Lot of weight.
Yeah, I mean, it's and between 115, 120 pounds on average when you throw your whole camp and
that's a lot of weight.
Whole sheep. My 10th one was special to me. Like I wanted to, it had been my goal to shoot to get 10 before I turned 30 for whatever, you know, I'm sure people will think, you know, I had a feature article in Outdoor Life about it basically. And, you know, the stuff I'd learned over that process, because mm-hmm. you're always learning,
right.
You know, the more you do it, the less you, mm-hmm. you realize that the less you know. And there was one guy, used to be some Sheep Foundation board member, wrote this long letter to the editor, and he apparently didn't realize that he was going to just forward it to me. You know, I don't know how many times he called me a pig.
For what?
For shooting my legal limit of sheep. You know,
that's ridiculous.
Because you were successful, you put the hard work in.
Yeah.
And you go do that.
And he was in Alberta, I think, and you know, here we, you know, we take a year, and I think, you know, so they may have one every 2 years that they can shoot. And I right. said, well, this isn't Alberta, you know, and sheep hunting or any hunting is not a zero sum game. Me shooting sheep isn't taking one away from someone else.
You shouldn't do it because he doesn't want you to.
yeah, basically, you know. You know, I'm greedy or whatever because I love hunting sheep, and we have a population that is
right.
sustainable, and you know, and the regulations for the sheep that are legal to shoot have been proven to not be detrimental to the population.
Right. We are our own worst enemy.
Not a lot of people. I mean, probably most people listening to the podcast probably know that, but explain a little bit real quick about what it takes to be a legal sheep.
Yeah. Okay. In Alaska, and there are a few, they call 3/4 curl areas, which everywhere in full curl, on a side note, get me back on track in a minute, but full curl, full curl Friday, you know, I'll sometimes be a smart ass and put, oh, well, broomed curl Friday or whatever. But Alaska has its own definition of full curl, which is a little different than Canada. But basically, in most areas, a ram has to be either full curl on one horn, which go read the definition yourself, 8 years old, mm-hmm. or have both tips of its horn broomed or broken off.
Right.
Huh. So obviously optics are a major part of sheep hunting.
Oh, huge. Yeah. If you don't have a good spotting scope, you might as well stay home.
Wow.
Or I say that if you don't have a spotting scope that works well enough, you better stay home. I started out for years with just the crap I could scrap together and afford. I shot my first sheep using a like 500-year-old Redfield spotting scope that I borrowed from my uncle.
What are you using now?
Last year I used a Loophole Goldring 20-60, and I think last year was the first year they had that in a 20-60. It's a pretty heavy scope, but I was really impressed with it, the quality. For the nice. Few years before that, I'd used the Swarovski HD 20-60-65.
How do they compare, truthfully?
The Swaro is definitely lighter, although I have to send my eyepiece back. I dug it out of the closet. And has got water condensation inside. I don't know how that happened. I didn't ever have it out in the weather or anything, but that's a side note. But I don't know. And maybe I haven't evaluated them side by side well enough to tell, but I was super impressed with that Loophole. You know, I didn't have quite as high expectations, but and maybe it was a bigger objective than the 65. I think this one was 80.
Is the Swaro STS?
Yeah. I believe so. I've had it so long. It's the one that they like discontinued a few years ago, but they're still in the stores.
Gotcha. That's STS, I believe.
But it's an awesome spotting scope.
What do you use for binoculars?
I've been using a lot a set of Swarovski 10x42 EL ranges, nice. And those are fantastic binos. Last year I tried the Loophole BX4 Pro guides 10x42s, and those were those worked really well as well. I had zero complaints about them. You spend a lot of time on the binos, but at least my style of sheep hunting, the binos are just to locate, and then your spotting scope is where it comes in. And that spotting scope and it all depends on light conditions and what's right. going on. But I was able to judge rams from 2 miles away every bit as good as I could with a Swarovski.
It's good to hear. I like to take in all that information. What are you using for a backpack generally over the last couple of years?
I've used both the Kafaru AMR and the EMR2. There's things I love about each one of them, and so I don't know which one's my favorite. But I use the EMR2 a little bit more.
I was just gonna say that's my favorite.
Why are you raising your hand?
I don't know. I love the zip. I love that zipper over the loader.
And that was one of the things I like better about the EMR2.
I'm raising my hand. There's no question. Video up here. And we're usually not even, we're all on mics. We're not even looking at each other because we can hear each other in the headset. So it's funny.
Once I got my mic figured out. Tying everything down, you can get that EMR2 super tight. It's if you want to call a learning curve mm-hmm. to get efficient at packing everything back in there. I like the AMR it's a little simpler than the EMR2 to throw together. I have to add side pockets. It's just not like just a hair smaller than I would like. I took that when I was going with my buddy Frank, who had a draw tag, and I wasn't hunting. I just had my gear and didn't have to worry about packing as much sheep meat out. Mm-hmm. But, I really like them. I've been using both the Hunter frame and the regular duplex frame, and nice. I like them both.
We talked about it before. You're not like a huge clothing gear guy. What do you generally use on those hunts? Yeah, clothing wise.
Whatever I can find at Value Village.
No, that's awesome. I just pictured like pleather pants.
Pleather pant, yep. Yep, nailed it. They don't even know what you are.
They're like, "What the hell is that?"
But no, I don't know, and just come from and before
I thought you were serious. Oh. I didn't know whether to laugh or
You can find some good stuff there occasionally. You know, make fun of me all you want, but
it's tough up in Alaska.
Times are tough, but and I guess stemming from the, you know, my background, I think killed 5 sheep before I even started writing for Outdoor Life and getting involved in the industry.
Wait, you hunted before this hunting industry thing?
So you didn't just shortly start when they hired you?
Well, first I got an Instagram page.
Right. That's the first step, right?
That's number one. Some nice tights.
Oh, and Lordy.
And I
checking off all the boxes so far.
So I was doing good basically. But
do they have a cooter vent?
That's what that is?
Oh, this went sideways.
But anyway, I mean just scrounging for whatever gear I could afford and to get me by. I kind of mix and match. Yeah. There's things I like about some stuff and others, you know, and whether that's to my detriment or not, I've always kind of made fun of the total matching like camo Carl.
Me too.
You know, everything this, I think even amongst, and I've like written pieces about how I could go, you know, I priced out all this stuff and I went down to, you know, a few of the stores in Fairbanks and just found stuff that some of the stuff was better. I thought, you know, this whole range of everything I would need clothing wise to go on a sheep hunt mm-hmm. for like half the price of the cheapest other one. Right. And, but those companies too, like they make great stuff, but I think some stuff is better than others across brands. And
I agree.
And I don't like getting tied myself into just locking in on one thing because, you know, whatever works, works. And what you can push the money towards.
Absolutely.
You know, like I'd tell a guy, you could, you know, spend your money on your optics or make sure you have the critical gear you need before you start worrying about the other stuff. You know, I've got this set of Mountain Hardwear pants that has been through like 6 sheep hunts and a couple goat hunts, and I got them for like $60 on sale or something. And I couldn't tell you what model they are. I don't know, don't care, but don't have any holes in them. That's just one example, but I've used some of the Browning stuff, and like I'm not gonna lie, like they sponsored some of my content, and mm-hmm. and their stuff was you know, I had zero problem with it. I'm not going to say it's the best because nothing's technically the best. Yep. But it worked for me. There's things I like, things I don't like.
The funniest thing to me on that is somebody will give advice or take advice from a person that only wears one brand.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "What's the best brand?" And the guy's sponsored by brand X. And that person is taking that person's, you know, he's taking what he's right. saying, and you're like, that dude's only wore one brand in the last 4 years. How the hell would he know what's best?
So I think we were discussing a whole another kind of
rabbit hole
extrapolation on that. I don't know what I'm saying, but you know, I remember a specific post, same thing that happens 5 times a day on any sheep hunting forum. What's the best pack to use? You know, and I'll follow some of them if I feel like it. And one of them, and I think they were saying Barney's, it's the best bar none, you know? And so naturally, like any digger, you go and like, see, all right, well, what has this dude killed and done? And so start, what else have you tried? How many sheep have you packed out with it or whatnot? And then instantly just defensive explosion, like, you know,
isn't and well, what pack? Do you, Isn't it the best one, the one that got you there and you killed your sheep and you packed it out with it?
Yeah. I mean, it's so fun and just get super defensive and taking it really personally. And I'm like, if I'm someone that has no idea and this guy says, this is the best or whatever, I'm going to be like, well, what have you tried? What have you done? You know,
where have you used it? What have you used?
Yeah, I'm not leading this into a thing where I've killed more sheep than you, so I know better than you. But like, really, right. Like, you know, get people to think about saying that.
You want to give them all the information you can, right? And then get them to look at all the options and see what's best for them.
Yeah.
Not say, like you said, there's guys that want to just go and say, this is what I've used. So, and give that advice. And they might be leading somebody totally down the wrong, you know, the wrong path.
Oh yeah. And even if the product like they're, you know, that they're talking about is a great one, it may not be as suited to that person.
Right.
You know, you can say, you know, well, this is what I use or have used and I like it because of this, this, and this, but
exactly.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's best for you, but that may not be best for Justin or Tanya or Tyler, you know?
Yeah.
Probably not going to be best for me because you look like you might wear a different size.
Just a little bit, but you can make it work.
You just got to strap it down harder.
You got to cinch that belt a little tighter.
Tyler, you've also hunted goats, right?
Yeah, I've shot a couple goats. I'm not haven't done as much as sheep, but it's a lot of fun. It's definitely different than sheep hunting in some ways, but it's that, you know, very similar mountain hunting. You know, people argue back and forth, oh, what's tougher, goat hunting or sheep hunting? Sometimes sheep hunting, sometimes goat hunting.
Yeah. And you also been down and hunt the mighty blacktails.
Yep. Those are some cagey suckers.
Yeah. We'll say Sitka blacktails because somebody will say, those aren't blacktail.
Yeah. But no, those are a lot of fun to hunt.
They are. I've done it one time and I'm definitely going back.
Yeah, super good eating, and spent a lot of time hunting them on a Fognak Island just north of Kodiak. Probably my favorite things about Thanksgiving in the rut, calling them in the timber.
Well, they come pretty good?
Oh, yeah. I figured they would. When I was a kid in Colorado, we, you know, it got a couple of those elk ink deer talk calls, and they see, you know, at least there they work great for mule deer, and I figure, well, these are just like a little mule deer, you know, how different could it be? And there's guys up there that have called you different calls and it works on them, but took those things down there and I was not prepared for how awesome those things worked.
Can you rattle those in at all?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that rattle them. I haven't messed around with it too much. Once I figured out that worked, that's pretty much all I was doing, but man, that's so much fun.
The island you mentioned, doesn't that have the elk?
Yeah, it does have Roosevelt elk on it.
Have you ever hunted those?
For one day.
Wow.
I was going down there to this lodge to do some hunting and help guide, and it was at some point you could get basically a registration cow tag. Mm-hmm. And so I got one, and we're dropping hunters off. We dropped these hunters off back behind the lodge in one spot, and they'd heard elk bugling. And so next day I went out there and I found where they'd been, but could never find them, all in the big timber. But and that's just hunting a really tiny portion of it. But I would like to hunt them down there someday.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I listened to a podcast with Steve Rinella hunting them. It sounded pretty fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bears there?
Yeah, there is a lot of brown bears there.
Mm. Well, tell us a little bit what you've done over the last few years with outdoor life.
Well, I started with old Aaron
Schneider. God, he's
Schneider,
ugly.
Yeah,
God, he's ugly, dude.
I pretty randomly got linked up with Outdoor Life about the time they were looking for someone else to do this blog program called Live Hunt with Aaron, and so we did that for a year. And I look back at my old writing; it's just like cringe. But that's how I got into it, and did that for a couple of years, and then that program kind of fizzled out. And so I did some print stuff and blog stuff for them kind of on a pretty limited basis for another year and a half or so, and then started picking up more work. And then 2 years ago, my editor actually came up with the idea of making a Facebook page for basically my content to live on, mm-hmm. you know, for me to do videos and Field and Stream, which is is owned by the same publisher. They, mm-hmm. their fishing editor had a page like that. I won't tell you what it's called because I don't want you to like it and I won't be able to catch up to it as quick, But
we don't like fishing on this podcast.
But so we've done that, and it's really done really well. It's been nice to have a channel that a lot of times I don't have to, not everything has to go through the editors, and I can interact, you know. In this day and age, like, it's nice to be able to, you know, whether if you're putting tips or information out there, to be able to interact with people,
right,
and answer questions and talk, you know, give a rebuttal to the people that are just being stupid and talking crap about you.
Just be scrolling by if they don't like it. But
yeah.
Choose to make a smart remark.
Yeah, that's okay though. I try to be very careful about anything I say. I can back up.
Right. Well, that always helps. There's a lot that don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that in the industry, and I don't even think of myself as an industry person. I just kind of cringe when I think that. I love making content and just sharing the stories and information. I don't know. I just consider myself a normal guy that's able to do that.
Yeah. If this all went away, you'd still be doing it.
I'd do the exact same thing.
Right. I think that's important to bring out.
I was doing it before, and, you know, and being able to get to a point where I can do that as a source of income allows me to do more of it.
Right.
That's my motivation.
Well, that kind of surprises me, actually, because when we first started talking, you said that when you decided to get into this, you had to get your social media page started. Then you had to get your yoga pants. So I figured you'd just go to like Lululemon to start your career if this didn't work out for you.
Yeah. I mean, there's one or two guys walking around SHOT Show that had Lululemon pants on, I think.
Shots fired. You know who you are.
So that's all I have to say about that. But
that's hilarious.
Don't take it personally.
No, set yourself up for that.
I think if you're out there putting out your content, you're backing up what you're saying, you're doing what you love, you know, and you're not trying to fool people or something you're not.
That's key.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and I try to be as just totally authentic, and even saying that sounds funny because everybody would say that. I don't know. It's just honestly how I do, and I like sharing the stuff, telling the stories. You know, I won't even tell you. I told them what I edit my videos on, and I won't tell you because it's a little embarrassing. But, you know, I'm able to put the stuff out there. It's a little rough around the edges, but it's what I do. It's who I am.
When I saw you shoot that grizzly bear, the editing looked fine to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it came across clear, loud and clear what you were doing.
Yep.
You're trying to kill a grizzly bear, and you did.
Yep. So. I'm hoping this year to do it with a stone point.
Oh, Lord.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Are you gonna have a gun to back you up?
Well, most of the time I end up going by myself because everyone else has a real job and has to work. And it's like, no, we have to go today.
Right.
But, I mean, I got the old Tree 75 hanging on the ladder there. But no, I mean, I gotta figure out. I may have to get another set of limbs that I can get a good set of wood arrows to spine with and tune them up. And there's a guy that I kind of helped him out on their moose hunt last year. That's a really good flint napper, and he said he'd make me some points, and I can send him the shafts and set them up.
Awesome,
that'd be cool.
And I have zero doubt in my mind that it'll kill him just as dead as anything. I mean.
I'm pretty sure.
I think I do.
Probably more of them bears or animals been killed with them stone than with the metal.
Oh yeah, and guys that are, you know, really into it and have shot a lot of stuff with it. You know, it does really. I think a good stone point will do on a heavy wood arrow will do better penetration wise than a number of broadheads that may or may not be on the market today.
are those flint? Are they different?
I don't know if he was going to make them out of flint or whatever. We kind of went over like a basic design to make them really robust. The guy can make them down to the grain basically.
Like how heavy will you go with that?
whatever it ends up being, I guess. Whatever it tunes.
Like, you thinking like 200, 250? I have no idea. 500 grains?
He was thinking it'd be best to make a about between 125 or 150, which is lighter than the steel points I shoot, but, you know, I can pony up and get some good tapered wood shafts. And
I've seen some of those arrowheads people find. They're sharp.
Yeah.
Just cut you and, like a razor.
I'll have to be a little more selective on my shot placement just in case something does, because I'm used to these arrows that'll shoot through just about anything end to end and go through any bones along the way. But I'm pretty excited. You know, it may go down in flames. It may be a miserable failure, but it's something I want to try. I think it'd be really cool.
Speaking of that, I was thinking I'd miss and start a fire.
Don't turn Ryan in the woods loose when on a dry year.
No, have you seen the fires he builds?
Yeah, they're forest fires.
I mean, they're not quite Aaron Snyder fires.
No.
They're pretty good.
If you ever end up hunting with the Snydog,
yeah,
you're going to have burnt clothes. Because one time he's like, he's always cold.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to start a fire. So, all right, whatever. And there's a little snow on the ground. And I look over it, and I thought it was a slash pile on fire. He drug like 50 logs, and there was like a small forest fire. And I'm like, good God, I'm glad there's a lot of snow out here.
It reminds me of a story. This old guy, kind of a legend wolf trapper up there. Story I'd heard secondhand. The guy said, yeah, he told me, yeah, you're ever out in the woods in the winter, and you get cold. Just start a tree on fire. When that one burns out, go to the next one.
I've heard start a stump on fire, but never a whole tree. That's awesome. Well, Tyler, where else can they find you?
I do have an Instagram account. Pretty new at that whole thing.
He's Insta famous.
Yeah, not even. Half of it's just to look over and roll my eyes, but no, I do have it. I couldn't think of anything better, so it's just the Tyler Friel.
Right. The Tyler Friel. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And you're on, I keep forgetting the name of that Facebook page.
Points North.
Points North. You have a regular Facebook page you want to be
found
on?
Yeah, I do. My personal page. Don't get offended if I don't approve your request, because there's like 50 million fake ones that are probably ISIS.
Not every today, day. ISIS. Not today.
So I don't know, but yeah, I'm on there. I don't have a lot of new stuff. I haven't been doing as much stuff lately on outdoorlife.com. They kind of changed the structure of the website, and some interesting changes have happened there recently, so we'll see how it shakes out.
You're also recently on the Kafaru cast.
Yeah, I was on there with Aaron, and I realized I have some serious speech impediments.
Hey, I have some speech impediments, and I have a fucking podcast. Imagine that.
I'll have to go listen back to this and say, I don't know how many times I've said, you know.
Truthfully, I've done a few of these, Tyler, and you're fine to me.
Well, that's encouraging to hear.
Tennis is bad words. Ladies email me saying your wife has a filthy mouth.
That's why we love her.
Yep. Well, it's definitely a little different and cool, actually, you know, being here doing this with you guys. It's been great to hang out. And
we appreciate it.
Because normally I'm skinning wolves in my shop listening to this stuff. So,
do you want to let out anything about what you have in the future as far as this stuff?
Oh, so I had this bright idea to jump on the bagwagon.
You didn't have a speech impediment until right there.
Yeah, right there. I jump on the bagwagon and copy everybody else and start a podcast myself.
You know the cool part when you told me that, because you called and asked about what we were using, is you have a lot of cool stuff that you don't talk about that you'll have time now to talk about.
And that's a big thing, you know. I'm late to the game in everything. So I just, you know, in the past year or so, started listening to more and more podcasts and stuff I like, stuff I don't. And since the website changed, you know, I used to have regular blogs, and the editors would, within reason, would basically let me rant about whatever I wanted to rant about. Even that was kind of limited, but I don't know. It's just such a cool platform for getting deep into things. You know, I love doing the Facebook stuff and telling the stories and videos, but it's not very deep. You know what I mean? You can't really flesh stuff out.
And there's being late to the party means that that means you let everybody else weed through all this shit that doesn't work, and then you just get to come in at the end and cherry pick all the stuff that everybody's already tested. Yeah.
It's like my bow shooting. I let my dad watch Masters of the Bear Bow because I can't stay awake through it. Do all this work, figure out stuff. Then I'm like, I like that. I'll do that, and that, and.
Yeah, that's how you do it. That's just being smart.
Yeah. Well, and part of anything, the day before I came down here, I helped teach a fur handling class because I do a ton of it. And in that or anything else, there's so many things that I've had to learn the hard way and to, you know, done the hard way or the wrong way for so long. And then someone shows me one thing that, like, it changes everything. It's just as you learn and grow, it. Combining all this stuff into what works for you, which is why I like, you know, helping people out, or, you know, yeah. Whatever it is may not be the best thing for them, but it's what works for me. And you just learn and cherry pick little stuff along the way to become more knowledgeable and, sure. And help, you know,
no, absolutely.
If everyone was just, well, I'm going to, you know, I'm too good to learn from other people, or, you know, that's where you go sheep hunting for 10 years and never kill sheep.
That's right.
I agree with that. Yep. You should never stop learning about.
Decided to do a podcast. We just called Brian Call. He told us everything. Yeah. To buy. So we didn't have to spend money that we didn't need to spend. And it's the great thing about having friends, you know?
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, kind of with Ryan. I'm like, I'm a babe in the woods on this stuff. Like, I got a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all new to me, but I think it'd be a lot of fun. And, you know, there's a lot of hunting podcasts out there. There's a handful that I enjoy and I think are worth listening to for me. You know, other people, everybody has their own taste, but, right.
You know, that's the thing. There's a slice of pie out there for everybody.
Yeah. And, I've spent a lot of time, like, despite my lack of deepness, like trying to think, you know, thinking through, the kind of stuff I want to talk about, what I want it to look like, and with basically an Alaskan perspective theme, mm-hmm. You know, there's podcasts where guys go up there and stumble around and then come and talk about it like they know what they're doing. Not to sound mean, but it's just a totally different perspective. Those of us who live up there and just the stuff is normal to us.
I think you should have podcasts on all the bullshit TV shows out of Alaska.
Yeah.
Oh,
that would be a good episode.
That was a great Uber ride.
Yeah, that would. Unfortunately, I hardly ever watch TV anymore. But, yeah.
The good thing about podcasting up there's a whole lot of dark days to get it done.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You just go in your cave and do it. But, you know, and the way we were talking, I think I will be terrible at just talking to the wall. And like a lot of good podcasts, it's nice to have people to bounce stuff back and forth. It's easy.
It is.
And natural. And, you know, it's funny because through some of them, I notice ones, you know, people that maybe less or zero experience, you know, just shoot for like to line up all these big names of people. And, you know, there's people that are well known that I would love to have on there. But a big thing is like, a lot of the people that are going to be on there all the time are my buddies that are just killers that live up there, you know, great people and very well experienced. And,
nobody knows about them at all.
No. And yeah. Just, you know, and nobody really knows about Nick, but no, just kidding. Nick.
Is that the Air Force guy?
Yeah.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah. Nick's a killer, man.
Oh, Nick is a slayer.
He gets after it. I not say when I first met him, just like anyone that moves up there, you kind of keep them at arm's length because there's so many people that just want you to hold their hand, take them out there so they can kill their animal. And,
yeah, we've met a few people like that.
You know, it and so it's kind of like, you know, but as I've gotten to know Nick, man, like I don't know that I've ever met someone who's such a go-getter in far as like, I want to do this and I'm going to do it no matter what it takes. And, you know, I mean, he got deployed to Germany over the winter and he's, you know, oh, Germany can't hunt anywhere. Like he went to Spain, shot an ibex, went to, you know, some Eastern European country and shot a bunch of stuff.
That's not the deployments I remember. He must be in the Air Force.
Something like that. But yeah, I mean,
I give him shit for being in the Air Force. Nick is a killer.
Oh yeah. Guys, like, you know, I mean, that dude stacks up more stuff in all on his own. He plans it, he does it. He stacks up more stuff than a lot of people that, you know, are all about themselves and looking like they do.
He had a picture of a goat he shot. It was just a cool picture. I remember sharing it on Rockslide.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a dirty goat, you know, and it was just in this cool background and this cool setting.
Yeah, he finally got himself a really nice sheep this year, and now he's hooked. I've been telling him, well, why aren't you going sheep hunting?
I think it's one sheep, and then it's kind of like a fever.
It is. Either you love it or it's not for you.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. We're really going to get off now because we're way over an hour.
Sounds good. It's been fun.
Tyler, thanks for coming on. I knew you'd be a riot, and you were. So we appreciate it.
Yeah. I didn't disappoint one person today. So.
Nope, not even with that wagon band or whatever we...
Oh,
the bag wagon.
The bag wagon.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.